Good evening, family. My name is Mike. I'm a recovered alcoholic. I have a lot to say to set up, not too much, but you know, first thing I like to do is I like to explain why I use the word recovered. First promise in the Big Book tells me that we can be recovered, and I'll get to that in a little while, what exactly that means to me. But I also read on page 90 in Working with Others. You don't have to turn to it, but I'm just going to read really briefly. It's like two lines. Again, this isn't Working with Others, and it's when we're talking to another alcoholic. And it says, if he wants to quit for good and if he would go to any extreme to do so, if he says yes, then his attention should be drawn to you as a person who has recovered. And this is why I use that word. I've dilly-dallied with that word. I used it originally out of ego. I heard some guy say it, and it sounded cool. And it got me attention, good or bad, it got me attention. And then I stopped using it because I took a lot of arrows in my back and people didn't like it, and it was out of fear. And then my sponsor, why don't you go find out what that word means to you? Remove fear and ego and find out if you want to use that word. And I found it on page 90 as an instruction. Way too much about that word. My home group is A Vision for You. We meet on Thursday nights in Union, Townley Presbyterian Church, 829 Salem Road, at 7:30 to 8:45. We are a step meeting. We don't read the step out of anything. We're very careful in choosing our chairperson. And that chairperson goes out and brings in speakers who've had an experience with the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Generally, we try to bring people who've actually taken people through the work, but we don't have a group conscience on that. And they talk for 20 to 35 minutes on their experience with that step, and then we go to a show of hands. And what drew me to that group was the maturity of shares. My sober date is October 1st, 2008. And when you said your anniversary, I just realized, oh my gosh, that's like next week. I'll have 8 years next week, God willing. But I found a much more mature share at this group, and that's what I like. So please come see us. I'm from California. I got sober in New York, and I've been in New Jersey for almost 3 years. I have a sponsor. His name is Walter from Union, and he has a sponsor. My service sponsor is Linda KK. And I sponsor men and women, and I expect them to sponsor men and women if they are capable. I've known people who aren't capable of sponsorship, and they find other ways to work with other alcoholics. That all being said, I haven't put much thought into what I was going to do here. The most thought I put into this was a year ago. I was really honored when I was contacted by David Palmer to ask if I'd be willing to come lead this meeting and take this meeting through the steps, as I do him in the Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know David Palmer well, but I know his reputation. And the guy who referred gave him my number. It was really an honor. Not only that, but I am familiar with your group, and I want to explain that to you. I got sober in Queens, and I was doing a Fellowship of the Spirit conference about 3 years ago in July, and I found out I was moving to Mountainside, New Jersey. And a man named Chris Schroeder was doing Fellowship of the Spirit. And this guy was on fire. And I heard him at some point mention Westfield. And I knew Westfield was one of the towns I was looking at moving to. And it was close to Mountainside where I was going. And I asked him, what's your home group? And he said, the Westfield Big Book Workshop on Sunday nights. And I know that Chris Schroeder's moved. But it said a lot to me about this group. And I've popped in, but Sunday's a hard day for me to get out. Unless I plan it far enough in advance. So I'm very grateful to be at this group. I want to thank everybody who does service to this group, particularly GSRs, intergroup delegates, and whoever takes out the garbage at night. That is a thankless job, and it's usually somebody with good recovery, is my experience. That all being said, I was asked how many weeks, what I like, what I need, and I thought about it, and that was the most amount of thought I put into it, and what that really looked like was I'll probably do 4 and 5 in 1 week, and I'll probably do 6 and 7 in another. And other than that, I probably do about a step a week, 45 minutes to an hour on a step. I do want to set up really quickly how I got to the process that I got to now, because the process that I do now is not how I was originally taken through the 12 steps. However, I was taken through the 12 steps the way I do it now. I've never removed or added anything to the way I do it myself. I've always had an experience with somebody who's had experience with this. My sponsor, Walt, who's sober 23 years, this is how he does the steps. That being said, when I first did the 12 steps, I was taken through it by a man who I love dearly. He had 2 years, and I was his second sponsee. And we sat and we read every single page of the preface and the forewords and everything. Again, beginning from title page through page 164. At about a year sober, and I'll talk about my journey through that as we go. At about a year sober, I was taken through the 12 steps by a man whose sponsor was taken through the steps by Bill Wilson, how they did the 12 steps before there was a book. And it was about 12 hours. Steps 4 and 5 were really 23 questions, because what we were trying to do was extract character defects to bring to God in 6 and 7. And the way I do it now is somewhere in the middle. I generally spend 3.5 to 4 hours with the sponsee the first time we get together, and they leave writing. I don't read every page of preface, forewords, Bill's story, etc. anymore with the sponsor the first time through. I like to hit on the three key features of alcoholism, my alcoholism. I don't tell them what they got. I don't try and fit them into the first step. I tell them the truth about my physical, mental, and spiritual illness. I tell them the truth about my powerlessness and unmanageability. And if they relate, then we move forward. And I send them home writing a list of people they're mad at. So again, this has been a journey how I've gotten to the way I do it now. I don't do it the right way. I do it the right way for me. I know 100 people who do it 100 different ways. And, you know, I've been in that militant phase. This is how you got to do it. If you're not doing it, you're not sober. And the truth is, I don't know any of that. What do I know about you? You know, I barely know about me. But what I will tell you is for 7 years, 11 months, and however many days, this has been working for me. And I found peace, and it's no longer necessary for me to drink. So if you want to call me a big book thumper, I'm okay with that. I'll never thump you with the book, but I can always thump back to the book myself. Fortunately, the words never change. My experience always does. Thank you for reading the set-aside prayer. I always start with the set-aside prayer when I sit down with the sponsee. And again, I'm just going to read this to you as I do with sponsees. One of the things I like to say up front, I've sponsored 2 English professors, and they read at a much higher level than me, and I talk to them the same way. I like to explain what words mean to me. You know, it's really easy to miss words. If is one of the most powerful words in this book, and it's an easy word to skip over. The word vital. You know, like I read that and I keep moving, and my sponsor told me to pause and look at that word. That means necessary for life. And so that's what I like to do. That all being said, I guess we'll go ahead and open up and get started. One other thing I wanted to say. Just an idea or a thought, something I personally like to do, and I'd like to share it with you. When I attend a big book workshop, or I sit and listen to somebody else reading the big book, I like to do one of a couple things. One is I like to use a brand new big book with no writing in it, because when I read my big book, especially in a sharing meeting, my eyes go to what I know, and I always share what I know. And if I'm listening and I know there's going to be sharing soon, I'm focused on what I want to share, and I'm not hearing something new possibly. Another idea would be have a pen and maybe you'll hear something new. And the third option would be what I'm doing tonight. I'm actually using a sponsee's book, and I love using someone else's book because I get a whole new look and notes. And I happen to know that this sponsee, she's taken everything from another one of my sponsee's notes, and his are amazing. Like, he blows my mind when I look at his notes. And she's taken his and added hers, so I'm really excited to see the notes. Plus, she has probably mine. And so I get these new experiences from looking at how other people have done this. And that's what this meeting, I think, is about. I'm not here to tell you how to do this or how to do it different. But maybe your experience gets enhanced, or maybe you get more efficient, or maybe nothing. You know, maybe I learned from you guys. I don't know why I'm here tonight. That all being said, the only thing I've thought about is God remove my ego and divorce me from my selfish, self-seeking ways. And that's what I did in my prayer and meditation. So the title book, title page. You know, again, I'm not here. Don't think anybody's dumb. This is just how I read the book to everybody. But there's a title page. And a title page generally tells me what a book is. And this book is called Alcoholics Anonymous. And then it goes on to give me the first promise of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from a seemingly from alcoholism. We'll get to seemingly hopeless in a minute. So there's that word recovered again, and we'll talk more about that. It doesn't mean I'm cured. I believe if I drank today, I'd be right back to physical allergy and mental obsession and probably spiritually ill, although I'm probably spiritually ill before I drink. But that's what this book is. This is the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered from alcoholism. And recovered, to me, that word, when I look it up in the dictionary, it says having regained health. And if I'm suffering mentally, physically, and spiritually, then hopefully I've regained health spiritually, mentally, physically. It's like if I got shot, I'm not bulletproof, but I can absolutely recover from that wound. That being said, and you may find this funny, you can write these numbers or not, but I like to turn to Roman numeral 11. That's XI. And again, this is just how I do it. I hit on the features of this illness. My experience with the first step, yeah, I spend a lot of time in Alcoholics Anonymous trying to convince people of their first step. Like if I had a superpower, that's what it would be. If I had a superpower, it would be to give you your first step experience. And I mean that with total love. It would be to put you in that place of desperation where you were willing to do what, you know, to do this process so that you can find the peace that's found at the end. But I no longer try and convince people of it. My experience is when you're willing to do the work, when you've had your first step experience, you've had it. Now I just needed to understand it. And so we're in the preface, and I like to start with the second full paragraph, and it says, because this book has become the basic text for our society and has helped such large number of alcoholic men and women to recovery, there exists strong sentiment against any radical changes being made in it. Therefore, the first portion of this volume, describing the AA recovery program, has been left largely untouched in the course of revisions made for the second, third, and fourth editions. The section called The Doctor's Opinion has been kept intact, just as it was originally written in 1939 by the late Dr. William D. Silkworth, our society's great medical benefactor. I sometimes make the mistake of like trying to break it down every sentence as I'm reading it, but what I like to do better is read through the paragraph and then go back and hit the key points that I have in here. And the key point that I like of this is because this book has become the basic text. This is really telling me a couple things. One is this is our textbook. You know, I've gone to school and I understand what a textbook is. Basically, when I'm learning something, I'm learning it out of a textbook and I have a teacher to tell me how to decipher that textbook. So it says this has become the basic text for our society and has helped such a large number of alcoholic men and women to recovery. And they go on to talk about strong sentiment against any changes. There's four editions of this book, and there have been some changes made to better reflect current society. I probably couldn't identify, maybe I could, to a guy crashing his buggy, you know, into a tree, but I can identify with a guy crashing his car, and maybe that's a ridiculous example. But times have changed. The recovery program has changed very little. In fact, if it's changed at all, it's softened up. It's watered it down a little bit. First edition does tell us, you know, read this book, and if you don't identify and you don't think you're one of us, throw it out. You know, we make the mistake in here of, I make the mistake in here often of not telling the newcomer the truth. You know, I like to tell the newcomer they're going to be okay if they just keep coming. And while that may be true, you know, I need to keep coming to hear the message, there's a lot of ifs in this book. And if I forget to tell them if, I'm not really being honest. I don't know if you have first edition. There's some cool changes too in there. Like when it says scores of men have recovered in the first edition, I think it says three. I know of three. We're going to move up to Roman numeral 18, which is basically the next page over. And again, this isn't to say there's not important information in the prefaces and forewords. There's a lot of good stuff in here. But again, how I read this book, I like to really hit home the first two steps of the sponsee. We get on our knees, we do a third step prayer. I actually move in, and once we get to 62, I read all the way through to 88, and then I actually jump to Vision for You. Working with others is not as current as, I mean, we have a place to find alcoholics now. I do go back after we've done Vision for You, as I'm taking sponsees through traditions and concepts, we go back and we read the prefaces and the forewords, and then we read Working with Others, and then we read To the Wives, etc. And that's just my process, and I know it's jumping around, and take it or leave it, it's been working for me. So this is a foreword to the second edition on Roman numeral 18, XIII. It says, this is the foreword as it appeared in the first printing of the first edition in 1939. We, of Alcoholics Anonymous, are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. So I'm going to stop there. First, I like to focus on the word we. We is a powerful word for me. My first step came with a we. God entered into my life and assisted me in seeing the truth. So this is God and I and other alcoholics is how I read this. We, meaning God, I, and you guys, are more than 100 men and women at the time who have recovered. And again, there's that word recovered, ED. And here it tells me, what does that mean? And it says, from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. And that's how I felt on September 30th of 2008, the last day that I drank. And it was necessary for me to drink. I was in this. And I love the word seemingly, because like, it's sort of a catch-22. Like, you have to be completely hopeless. Or I had to be. I'm sorry, I keep saying you. I had to be completely hopeless. I had to have no hope left of the way that I thought I could do it, of doing it myself, of all the buts I had. You know, because I was willing to do anything to stay sober. But anything. I swear to God, I'll do anything. Until you handed me a book. You know, I just didn't believe white words on or black words on white paper and this God idea was going to work for me. Until I got to a spot where I was completely hopeless. And it's seemingly hopeless because here I am. You know, but for me, it had to absolutely seem completely hopeless. And the state of mind and body. You know, mentally, I can't drink. I can't not drink. I don't want to drink anymore. I'm having an out-of-body experience as walking by a liquor store, saying, no, 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 watching myself go into the liquor store. And then once I start drinking, whatever I've convinced myself I'm going to drink never goes that way. 5 days later, I'm still drunk. So it goes on to say, to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. And I'm sure everybody who ever sits up here really hits home on this sentence or not. But it says to show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered, which is really cool. It's not a lot of kindas. There's not a lot left for me to interpret as a newcomer. I say that kind of hesitantly because there are different interpretations of this. But as a newcomer, completely hopeless and completely willing, I'm taking your interpretation. You know, I have to identify with the first step and believe that I have this thing. But it says precisely how we have recovered. I'm a chef. I love recipes. I don't usually use them anymore. I mean, I look at them and then I make it my own. But this will tell me exactly how much salt to add. Stir three times. Exactly what degrees. You know, like, precisely how. That's what this book is for. It's the main purpose of this book. So for them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further authentication will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages of all, for all. And I know personally I had no idea what alcoholism was. When I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't come here to stop drinking. I came here because I wanted the problems that came with drinking to go away. I didn't know what an alcoholic was, but I certainly didn't think I was it. So I came in here and I said, my name's Mike and I'm just checking it out. And I found that that brought me far too much attention. And when I just said I was an alcoholic, it was easier to just disappear and be invisible. I sat in AA for 2 years. I couldn't get 10 days because I was full of butts and I don't want us and I don't like that. And no thank you. But I didn't comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And many people out there who aren't alcoholics still don't comprehend that. And that's okay. And besides, we're sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. So this is a way of living for me. And we'll dig deeper into that later. But the way I had been living just simply didn't work. No matter how hard I tried to manage my life, no matter how hard I tried to force things to happen, make them happen, stop drinking, it never went well. And I had some brilliant ideas, so I thought. When I run them by normal people, they don't think they're nearly as brilliant as I do. But I needed a new way of living. It wasn't just the alcohol that was a problem. You know, in fact, it turns out that alcohol really wasn't the problem. It was the solution, and we'll talk more about that later. But this way of living has its advantages for all. And I share this, too, because you know, so many other 12-step programs have come from these 12 steps. This is a way of living that is about peace and love. And my sponsor, I started taking a non-alcoholic through the steps, and they didn't want to finish it for whatever reason. My sponsor's taking non-alcoholics through the steps. I had a sponsee who I took through the 12 steps, and his mom came to me afterwards and crying and said, "Who is this man you returned to me? I want what he has." And she got herself an Alcoholics Anonymous sponsor and went through the 12 steps and then joined Al-Anon and started taking Al-Anon through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. So it does have its advantages for all. It's just a way of living. That all being said, we're going to move on to Roman numeral XX, Roman numeral 20. And we're just going to start with the first full paragraph. Actually, there isn't. No, we're going to start with, we'll just start at the top. A grew by leaps and bounds. For these, there were two, again, this is forward to second edition. I think this was in the 70s, 55, sorry. For this, there were two principal reasons, the large number of recoveries. They're talking about A's growing. A's just blowing up. At this time, what they did with alcoholics is they locked them in sanitariums when they couldn't do anything else. Because we're nuts, right? I mean, you know, the real insanity is what happens to me before I pick up alcohol. But all the things that we do look nuts when we're on alcohol. My experience today is all the things we do when we've been drinking is really just science. Like when you put that amount of alcohol in your system without any sustenance or sleep, that's just what it does to the human body. Phenomenon of craving aside, if you drink, you know, 2/5 of vodka in a day and you haven't eaten anything, let alone slept, it does things to any human body that just look insane, you know. So for this, there were two principal reasons. The large number of recoveries in reunited homes. These made their impressions everywhere. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. I like to read this because this shows, at least at the time, what the success rate seems to be. You know, we have all these ideas of what success rates, and I remember being in treatment, and they said 1 in 10 out of you, and I don't know what all those numbers are. Like, I don't know. I'm not, you know, I used to work in that field. I don't know what studies they're using, but what happens to me is I trust Alcoholics Anonymous and the men and women who wrote this book, because it's been working for me. So what it says here is, of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, now my experience with really tried means did the 12 steps, 12-step program, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, some people know this, maybe you don't. There was a bunch of men and women getting together, and when you went to an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting in the 30s, 100% of the people in the room were recovered because they went through the 12 steps in about 2 days, and then they got together to talk about helping alcoholics. But they didn't deal with people who, there wasn't enough of them to deal with people who didn't want to do this process. You know, they sat down and they went through the steps in about 12 days. They sat down, we'll talk more about that later, but of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once. So those alcoholics who came, went through the 12 steps, really tried, got sober at once, 50%, that's a pretty good number, right? Why do we not see that number today? We probably do. We probably do. Probably 50% of the alcoholics who come and really try never drink again. More importantly than that, they find peace. And it's not necessary to drink again. And remain that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses. So again, these are, we're still talking about those that tried. 75% of alcoholics who tried in 1955, these 12 steps, never drank again. It's a pretty cool number. And among the remainder, those who didn't really try, right? This was prefaced by really tried. Those who stayed with AA showed improvement. I don't know what that means. I don't. I just don't know what that means. I sort of see a couple things in here. And I shouldn't say that. I see alcoholics who recover. There's probably non-alcoholics who think they're alcoholics and goes through these 12 steps and recover. You know, I don't know. It's not my job to figure that out and weed out who's alcoholic and who's not. But I also see a lot of non-alcoholics who come to Alcoholics Anonymous and seem to be at peace without any 12 steps. And again, I don't know who they are, but it just seems that way to me. It seems like there's a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who don't need God, who don't need this process. And maybe they are alcoholics. Who am I to say? You know, maybe a man out in the jungle somewhere who's never seen a white man, let alone a book. But he knows how to crush grapes and he's an alcoholic. Can God get him sober? Absolutely. God's not confined to this book. But that's not AA. AA is a book. And a fellowship and other things. But it starts with a book. The point I was getting to at earlier is these meetings didn't have a name. And then they wrote a book and then titled the book Alcoholics Anonymous. And then they decided to name the meetings after the book. Which tells me the book's pretty important. So I don't know what showed improvement means. Maybe they stopped drinking and everything looked okay. You know, my experience with Alcoholics Anonymous who don't have a spiritual awakening, however you get it, because we also don't have a monopoly on God, which means we don't have a monopoly on recovery and peace, because that's where God is, where those things come from. But maybe not drinking is enough for you. For me, we'll talk about it more when we get to the fourth step. At 8 months, balking on a fourth step, I was up to stuff that I hadn't even done drinking. I was causing more harm in my family's life than I had been drinking. At least when I drank, I'd shut up and pass out. And I could be controlled for $3 when I was drinking. If you give me $3, I'll do anything. I'll do anything you want. I'll shut up. I'll clean the bathroom. You know? So other thousands came to a few AA meetings, and at first they decided they didn't want the program. But great number of these, about 2 out of 3, began to return as time passed. We're going to move on to XXII. And again, we're sort of talking about growth, which is like, again, the next page over. We're going to start we're just going to read the bottom paragraph. This is the foreword of the third edition. In spite of the great increase in size and span of this fellowship, at its core it remains simple and personal. Each day, somewhere in the world, recovery begins when one alcoholic talks with another alcoholic, sharing experience, strength, and hope. We. And it does remain simple, and I do need people. You know, when I say Alcoholics Anonymous is just a book, it's not 100% true. I need other alcoholics. My sponsor alone can't see all the truth about me. I need 4 or 5 or 10 alcoholics who care enough about me to make me uncomfortable to tell me the truth when I'm wrong. And it is personal. And each day, somewhere in the world, this is where it starts. It starts with an alcoholic hearing something. I remember sitting in a meeting, and this is before I was done drinking, before I had my first step experience. But I remember somebody saying something, and in my head I went, I never told anybody that. How did he know? And I don't remember exactly what it was, but it was something along the lines of feeling. I remember somebody feeling like a piece of crap the way I felt. And they worded it. And that was the first thing that really got my attention in Alcoholics Anonymous. Because before that, I'd just been sitting around here waiting, I don't know, solving all your problems in my head and waiting for this amazing thing to happen that I could control my drinking again. But again, they talk about one alcoholic with another sharing experience, strength, and hope. This book is going to tell me over and over and over and over why I need you. Whether you're a newcomer, old-timer, same time as me, whatever it is, I need you. When all else fails, helping you is really my help. You know? And it's okay to do things wrong. That's just randomly written on the bottom of this page, so I'm just reading it. And it is. It's okay to do things wrong. So we're going to turn to Roman numeral 28, XXVII. Whoa, where did I lose my... XXV. There we go. We believe, and so suggested a few years ago, first full paragraph on that page, on the same page, right? We believe, you and I and God, Alcoholics Anonymous, and so suggested a few years ago that the action of alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is the manifestation of an allergy. So we're going to talk a little bit about the physical part of my illness. I didn't know I had a physical part of my illness. All I thought was I drink too much and I can't stop. Or can't not start, really, in retrospect. Most of what I know was shared for me isn't original. Most of what I know I didn't learn till much later. I see in retrospect. I wasn't aware at the time. So we believe, and so suggested a few years ago, that the action alcohol on these chronic alcoholics is a manifestation of an allergy. And I'm going to go back and break some of those words down. That the phenomenon of craving is limited to this class and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. So the action, when I put alcohol in my system, it takes an action on my system. This is the thing that sets me apart from normal people. It takes an action on me. Alcohol does something to my body. Of alcohol and these chronic alcoholics is the manifestation of an allergy. And manifestation, I really need to get an exact definition out of the dictionary. But what manifestation means to me is, like, let's say I have a vision of a beautiful home that I want, right? In my mind, can everybody vision like a home that they would want? So let's say, and it probably never happened for me, that home is built now and I can go touch that home. That home that I'm now touching is the manifestation of this idea I had. It is something become real. So the action that alcohol takes is the manifestation of a phenomenon of craving. Phenomenon of craving or an allergy. When I heard the word allergy, it really confused me because I'm allergic to penicillin. And what does that mean? If I take penicillin when I was very little, I think I smashed my fingers in a car door and I had to take penicillin. And what happened was I swell up and I get hives and I can't breathe. My body rejects penicillin. So I think an allergy is a body rejecting something. I'm like, no. My body certainly does not reject alcohol. And what my sponsor explained to me, that an allergy, the definition of an allergy for him was, and for me is, the abnormal reaction, an abnormal reaction to a normal substance. Alcohol is a totally normal substance, right? Many people can take it. Many people cook with it. Does all sorts of things. They even take paint off the walls. But I have an abnormal reaction to it, which is quite different from my abnormal reaction to penicillin. When I take alcohol into my system, my body wants more. And there actually have been studies done, I don't know exactly when, and I should probably have them with me to cite them, but a normal person may get a craving for alcohol. Long day at work, right? I mean, of course we can relate to this because we always have a reason where I need a drink. But I think a normal person has a long day at work, whatever, and they say, I hear non-alcoholics all the time say, I need a drink, you know, after a long day. And they get this little craving, right? And they have a couple drinks and it goes away. For me, I get this little craving and I put a drink in me and it grows. And I have another drink and the craving grows. And the more I drink, the more the craving grows. It never just goes away. I'm generally stopped from drinking by passing out, running out of money, ambulance, handcuffs, something of that sort. That's generally how I stop drinking. I literally am drunk 5 days later. Because once I start, I usually drink till I pass out and wake up to drink till I pass out. And there are a few times where I'm able to stop and I like to fool myself. There were a few times in the alcoholic phase, in the extreme alcoholic phase of my alcoholism, where I was able to stop for a night. I got a good buzz. I should probably go home. They're very rare. And when those happen, I fool myself and say I can't be an alcoholic. You know, how many people have been able to control alcohol for a couple months or even a year? I've met alcoholics who, how many people I've met, they go 90 days and they say, I'm not an alcoholic. Now they reward themselves and 5 days later, they're still drunk and back where they started off. That's not my experience, but so I suffer from this phenomenon of craving, this allergy. Once I put alcohol into my system, the alcohol is now drinking. The alcohol's in charge. The alcohol's making decisions for me. And, So this phenomenon of craving is limited to this class, us, and never occurs in the average temperate drinker. These allergic types can never safely use alcohol in any form at all. That was a hard pill for me to swallow in the beginning, but I was taught that I just can't drink today. I don't know about tomorrow. I can't sit here and think about, what do you mean I can never drink again? Because I have this dream of a wedding, or, you know, if my wife dies, that'll be my reason, you know. But I really had to come to accept that alcohol does this to me. That once I start, I have no control. And I'm like a scientist. I tested it far beyond what I think any like scientific organization would require. You know, like I tested it 10 times over and over because I was obsessed. I had to be able to control it because I needed alcohol. If I don't have alcohol to take away how I feel. And we'll talk more about that later, this spiritual malady. My restless, irritable, and good discontent. I can't be in healthy relationships. I can't talk to people. I can't feel uncomfortable. If I don't have alcohol to get me out of that, what do I have? You know, this alcoholic's very grateful for alcohol. I'm really grateful that I had alcohol because I feel like I don't think I could have bared, whatever the word is, life. I think I probably would have had to kill myself. I don't know. You know, who knows what I would have actually done. But I'm really grateful that I had alcohol to help me escape for a lot of years. The problem is it doesn't work anymore. And having once formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence and their reliance upon human things, their problems pile up on them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. Frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. The message which can interest and hold these alcoholic people must have depth and weight. In nearly all cases, their ideals must be grounded in a power greater than themselves if they are to recreate their lives. One of the things I forgot to preface in the beginning, when I sit down with the sponsee, I like to tell them we're going to look for prayers, promises, actions, and warnings in this book. And we're going to look at words like must and if. You know, we strongly suggest in Alcoholics Anonymous that you take the treatment. You know, and this isn't original, but I've heard people say, like, it's amazing how, like, if you had a debilitating disease, like cancer or something like that, and there was absolutely a treatment for it, you'd probably take the treatment exactly as prescribed. Mm-hmm. You know, an alcoholic, given two choices, like I'm absolutely going to die and I believe that, going the way I've been going, or accept spiritual help, I kind of go, you know, I kind of weigh the options. And then I actually go back to this one. So anyways, this paragraph, having formed the habit and found they cannot break it, once having lost their self-confidence and their reliance upon human things, their problems pile up in them and become astonishingly difficult to solve. I got a buddy who describes this as like driving a 1985 station wagon, like a Datsun station wagon, and I drive it forever and ever and ever, and I just beat the crap out of this, and this is my life, and I throw all the garbage in the back, you know? And then one day I hit a tree, and my whole life is falling up into my lap. And that's alcoholism for me on my last day. My whole life's problems have just fallen in my lap, and it doesn't look good. I don't know how I'm ever going to even begin to sort all of this. And then it says, frothy emotional appeal seldom suffices. Frothy emotional appeal to me, I best describe as like that bubbling, pleading, begging cry of my mother. I didn't have children at the time. I had a wife. But my mom was the one who got me in the gut when she begged me. And it wasn't enough. I thought it was enough. I said, okay, I'll quit. I swear to God. Probably pass a lie detector test because I really believe in my heart that I won't do it again, that I'm done drinking. I have all the reason to stop drinking. Every reason. And I've had every reason. Offers. I could have owned a business in 1997 if I'd stopped drinking for a year. I drank the next day because I was convinced I could fool them that I wasn't really drinking. Threat of parole. You know, I got to be at the parole office tomorrow. And I'm drinking till 2 in the morning. Because I can get it out of my system in 6 hours. You know, this is the stuff I convince myself. No human power. Threats, promises seem to be able to stop me. They gave me good reasons and I really wanted to stop sometimes. But they never sufficed. Never were strong enough. The message which can hold and interest this alcoholic must have depth and weight. I needed to first know you knew my pain. I remember going to IOP and I my counselor right off the top, like she's interviewing for a job, like, you know, are you an alcoholic? And oh, you can't help me. You know, that's what I believe. Although she is the one who actually finally got me to come get a sponsor in Alcoholics Anonymous. She was the one who finally convinced me. She wrote a contract for me in IOP. She made me sign a contract, and a blank contract at that. And I said, well, why is it blank? She said, because I can write anything on here that I want. And one of the things she wrote on there was get an Alcoholics Anonymous sponsor and do absolutely everything that he said. Mm-hmm. But it had to have depth and weight. To really identify with you, you know, there's a really cool writing, and it's not conference approved, but it's called Why We Were Chosen. I don't know if anybody's written that. Google it, Why We Were Chosen. But it talks about God didn't choose Harvard grads who studied alcoholism for 20 years to do this. He chose us because we hear the cries of the sick. You know my pain. I love every one of you in this room because I bet after the meeting if I was in some pain and I needed to cry, you'd sit and listen. And you hopefully wouldn't judge me. We still judge each other, but hopefully after the initial judgment, you'd let it go and know we're equals and probably whatever you've done is just as bad. Or not. It doesn't matter to me. But it has to have depth and weight. I need to know that you've been where I've been. And I also need to believe that you have a real way out. And it's funny because September 30th, 2008, the last day I drank, I detoxed at home, which is a horrible idea. But I wasn't allowed in any of the detoxes I knew. But when I woke up that morning, again, this is the last day I drank, a couple things were different. One was I actually had liquor left, which was very rare. Like, it never mattered how much liquor I bought the night before. It was always gone. but I had about half of a fifth left. The other thing that was strange was there was only one toothbrush in my bathroom, and my wife had taken a duffel bag to work. And I couldn't figure out the ego of this alcoholic. Like, she couldn't have left me. What is she going to do without me? I hadn't worked in 2 years. I don't know when the last time I showered or ate was. I was this disgusting, sweaty mess in his boxers on the couch drinking for years, you know? Like, I'm not drinking today. I'm drinking for years. And when I came to Alcoholics Anonymous that time, something else different happened that morning. God entered my life, and I wanted no part of the word God, but he entered my life because I knew that this time I was coming and I was doing anything you guys said. What time do I stop? About now?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me finish this thought, and then we'll move on. And now I sort of have an idea, so I'll be a little more efficient next week. I walked into an AA meeting where there was a guy who had always told me the truth. He had pissed me off over and over and over. He had said to me, "You're going to drink again." You know, he said to me, "You're dealing with untreated alcoholism." He said to me, "You're not going to be all right. Just going to meetings isn't enough." He had said a lot of things to me that really pissed me off. But in this moment of surrender, I knew that this guy, like every time I talked to this guy, I got afraid because he saw through me. I couldn't BS this dude. And when I walked into that meeting, and before the chairperson was done, my hand was in the air and I was crying, "Please, somebody help me. I swear to God I'll do anything this time." And after the meeting, the guy grabbed me and he said, "I have too many people right now to be able to give you the time you need." But he immediately walked me to a man and he said, "This will be your sponsor." And it's the last dude I would have picked because I'm picking on visual and you don't look like. It was this short biker dude. And we'll talk more about that next week. So, thank you.